Are they off the call though? They'll be open soon.
They did.
We're here. Okay.
First, I want to go. Because we didn't do that when she was reading. So right. Okay. This poem I'm going to read you has been written some time ago. I never read it before, and I think it's maybe appropriate time to read it. It's dedicated to a woman who was killed by a guided missile. She was a friend of the family. Her name was Leila Akhtar. She was an artist, an amazing artist, and she was the most beautiful and alive woman. And it was during the Clinton administration when Baghdad was regularly bombed by guided missiles and people were basically taken out. And I think she was a very excellent ambassador for the country, and they decided that she was going to be taken out. And of course, it was never in the news. People didn't hear about it. And because people were considered less than human, it wasn't considered important to report on what civilians were being killed during a non-war that was before the invasion of Iraq. So it's called On the Other Side of the World, just to remind us that people are human everywhere. Mm. On the other side of the world, an old woman approaches a soldier. She cooks dolma on Fridays, kubba on Thursdays. She makes the best mother of seven eyes. She loves weddings and dancing. She sings like Kulthum. She once taught French at the College of Commerce. Now she throws dust on her head like a peasant. Her car is riddled with bullets. Her grandson is dead, and so is her daughter. She gets off the ground waving her arms. An American soldier takes aim. Her life is measured in seconds. She's my mother. She's my grandmother. She's the soldier's mother, too. She is mothers the world over. On the other side of the world, a little girl lies on a hospital trolley. She loves Tintin, fresh mishmish, her kitten, Jinjil, and Miss Leila, who teaches math in her school. A long Barbie in pink is held to her side, where tumors seep yellow bile. Depleted uranium has eaten her flesh, till nothing is left of this little girl. She's my daughter. She's my sister. She's the niece I never had. She is millions of girls the world over. On the other side of the world, a little boy sits on the sand playing marbles, their sheen as bright as his blue eyes. His mother is gone. His father is gone. He has no one. He once loved Nabok and Tukki and was thrilled by the Zara Ferris wheel. He misses treats cooked by his gran and trees he once climbed. Each Sunday, he leans on his crutch, lights candles in church. His brother gave him these marbles before he, too, disappeared. He's my son, he's my brother, he's the nephew I love. He is millions of boys the world over. On the other side of the world, an old man searches the gutter. He once told his children a story or two of Sinbad, Tantal, and Ali Baba. This morning, he ate fresh game on hobus. His wife poured him his tea. He now circles the Shorja after a bomb ripped the scene, searching for pieces of wife, brother, niece, and his son, Mohsin. Not a shred of their flesh can he find to bury in Najaf. He might as well be wrapped in green. He's my father, he's my uncle, he's my grandfather too. His father's the world over. On the other side of the world, a woman lies dead in the ruins of home. She is wife and mother. Her husband lies dead beside her. Her daughter stumbles blindly in the rubble of home. Her crime was her art, this beacon of light in the hands of a woman. An American missile, precisely guided by greed, found her repugnant, put an end to her deeds. Her name was Leila Akhtar. She is all women who wield pen, brush, or sing in a bid for peace. She is me, she is you, she is us, she is human, the world over. Hey! time later. I might read this poem in a few minutes, or maybe after another person reads it, because I'm reading it for somebody who's downstairs smoking.
Absolutely beautiful, see? Next up we have Edward LeBoy.
I just have two short poems. The first one, it's a poem in two parts, but I'll only read the first part. It's called Someone Else's Words. It starts with a quotation from Sue Hubbard, which says, "Love these days usually comes dressed in inverted commas." Someone else's words. Let's just not bother about the words it occurs to me to use. Let's this time leave beguiling and utterly luminous unsaid. Every facile phrase said so often before, and this time, response, spare the way you're looking tonight, the shortcomings of my very best words. Do this in hope and belief the words I would use must exist, are, I'd expect, hiding bashfully away within a poem I may or may not have ever read. Someone else's words, as I mutely wait, imploring the silent and empty air between us to produce them out of nothing, to slip out of their inverted commas and nakedly onto the tip of my tongue. Mm-hmm. And this is something a bit newer, an attraction. She was sure it was death. This same old shit burn. These same crap songs. Even the cracks in the walls familiar. Her outfit, another poor choice. But he was donning no giveaway black hooded cloak. Was brandishing no gleaming sigh. Maybe it was the fingers, long, white, looking smooth as alabaster as they coiled around their gin and tonic. Death, in fact, was the snappiest dresser, the most exquisite flesh covering his bones. Full strawberry lips, his smile a tempting ambiguity of love and cruelty. Hair a la Samson, curled long sandy locks. She wanted nothing more than his stool to swing around towards her, his beautifully blue-eyed sockets to invite her over, to feel his breath pour champagne-like over her, to taste his warm kiss on her ready lips, tongues colliding like dancing, drunken bodies. Even an eternity of it seemed too short a time.
Thank you. Patrick Connor is next.
Wall for mere decoration after the Reformation. Those monkish heads saw William's army besiege Elizabeth Fort. Musket balls whined past their faces then. The Croesus rich Chattertons paraded their coffins past on the way to their mausoleum 2 centuries ago. Philandering couples canoodled beneath the font's 4 nostrils, obscured by wild clematis. How did they judge the smell of pert youth? Last century I tore back the undergrowth so the heads could view again the cloudy blue skies over St. Mary's of the Isle, how the ideal menswear factory bustled with industry. Now they've gone and no one knows where. Now when the factory is silent, the convent girls are thinning in numbers while widening in girth, and the old nuns no longer cover up their chaste graying locks with black wimples. Last century, on summer nights with star-riddled skies, I slept in a fluorescence of untrimmed shoots, sprouting 4 feet tall round the base of the great elm pole. The heads adjacent kept the demons of the surrounding graves at bay, the souls of never satisfied, who died well before ready, their names obscured by weathering on headstones half sunk from subsidence for centuries. The blackbirds trilled their shrill alarm as I awoke and strode through the stalks of wild raspberries. But what alarm sounded when some bastard stole the holy water font with 2 heads, like some underloved double-headed fetus sharing 1 heart? 2 heads, my friends.
Thank you very much. Next we have Billy Ramsell.
I've been working on this poem about a young woman who was in a cult on a compound, and after it was raided, she's now readjusting to normal life. I think of you less often now, since the feds and deprogramming. Now I spend all my mornings here in Cafe Languedoc, leafing to a page, watching the day score the generic table nests with patches of shadow and amber, while I catalogue every summer odour I meet on my walks through town's 4 public gardens. I just wrote that down with a ghost, so I just could read it. Begin at the beginning, as the second William was wont to instruct, if only. But after 3 months in St. Mary's, after the blue pills and group, the beginning's just a vagueness, you know. I only know I loved you, you and Karina and Katerina, Abby, that scheming nun-cunt, and even the egregious Leonella, but mainly you. Not just for the cup breasts and cuddling, but because we were sisters, in a sense beyond that dictated by a few treads of protein. To rise early and wash myself, to flinch once, twice, 3 times before the alpine sluice in a bare-ass cubicle, to feel lifted out of myself, to let, as the second William once put it, the day in its abrasiveness scour my bones, to feel clean. Remember how we all shared everything, laughter, labour, kale and sweet lettuces, manure and security duty. It was so beautiful. And as we ate, the second William would tell us that the human was this or that and so on, that each body so nourished was merely a kind of dorm room, a place where an ancient, mysterious animal waited and slept. Remember? I'm not saying you told on us. I'm not saying you turned states. I'm not accusing you of heresy or jealousy that the second William suffered me to enter his chamber. I think of you less often now, but always when the lean-armed waitress laughs, or when her hair hangs just so over espresso machine or till. What does your low profile mind reach up toward? In your forgetful bed, in your hard to find recovery town. If this finds you, it won't, I know it won't. But if this finds you, remember that one evening by the red sands of the perimeter, just you and me with our assault rifles. As evening turned the blood sand amber and then wine. The scent of nettles, the scent of laddery sap mingling with pollen. In your futile, well-meant prayers, remember me. Thanks.
Thanks for that, Patricia.
Thank you, Kieran. I just read a brief piece from my novel, The Quest for Lost Era. The following Thursday came thick and fast, and with it the promise of alcohol and a good night and entertainment. There was not much to pick and choose in Ballybessard, but it was better than nothing. Nothing being zonking in front of the television with a few cans. Casties had a check history. Whether all of it was true, no one can tell, but it didn't matter. Who cared if it was a scene about Shujo by the back and tans and had bullet holes behind the bar? The pints were still cheap. It was true, however, this traditional bump was a helium bar. The reason for this was due to Section 31, in which Sinn Féin figures had to make contact with the press only by way of not speaking with your own voice on the screen, but using the actor's voice instead. The only way around this for this pub, for this part of the world was short of actors, was for the Sinn Féin figures to suck helium at the bar who are speaking to detract any credibility of what they're saying. Once Section 31 was repealed, it reverted to being an ordinary, traditional bar, being one that always stopped the latest edition of Unplugged, Gingy Red by the likes of Sam. Even the toilet facilities were somewhat authentic, in that it could have come from a maze. Male toilets were just a plastic sheet against the back wall, and the women's in the Cassie's own back bedroom. The highlight of the pub, like any pub in Ireland Lane, the smoking area, affectionately termed due to its small size as the shoebox. If they were correctly grateful for the inconvenience, for you might find therein a nice creature in the vicinity who had nothing in common with you except by force of disgusting habit, namely smoking. Their eyeballing was nothing more than a glazed expression of another evil in this country, namely the Ishka Baha. You could pick and choose from the best of them thereon, and pray that they would not even remember your name the following morning, after the obligatory knee trembler. It was a case of sowing wild oats and praying and pouring and probably more clock failure. Without wind and fail this Friday morning, the cacophonic sound of empty retching out behind the spoil heaps in the Fort Lewis and behind the smuggler's cabin was a joy to everyone's ears. That was until the Fort Lewis were put to bottom and vomit, not to mention the pure graffiti on the inside of the door. Without fail, one was inscribed the instruction for toilet tennis there. Someone in a more childish can wrote, Gary Glitter took the baby sitter up the shitter. Still another would write inspiring lyrics such as this. In 1966, the Queen put down her nicks, shipped a bomb and said, yum yum, it tastes like Weetabix. Thank you. I'll have copies of sale if you have to come up and be after it. Thank you.
Thanks, Patricia. Yeah, that book's been launched a number of weeks now, so if you'd like to hear more, Patricia has copies.
Thank you. Thanks,
Karen. Mags is up there.
Just for an honour of movable feast of Eid, which is just finishing up. But this is a bit of a testimony to last friends, so please indulge me if you don't mind. This Lenten floor, a Baghdad lullaby. Mafi mushkil aini, no problem, my eyes. Are an Arabic reassuring mantra that I became very familiar. Yale imshi, get up and walk. Hum did little habibi, with lots of shoulders playfully undulating. These phrases to be learned with no translator, no maturgina. Phonetic Baghdadi accented Arabi. Learned by charades and smiles, nods and points. So
soon they found their meaning. Shukran aini, thank you, my eyes. I stepped over Jamil's mom, a child herself. So beautiful. Am I okay? So beautiful on cold, dusty lino, her miniature in the cot. Jamil did not whimper. White cells at rock bottom. Jamil is our absolute beautiful sister. Sister, sister, the only words she ever called to us, only when she could no longer be the sole provider. Massage with strange, pungent, unprocessed oil. Hand feeding her cubic bone nose with mezza, bathing most delicate minimum of handling. I'm no sister, I'm just Julie. Just Julie. Okay, Sister Julie. We had to sell our goat to be here. Those related to Eric had no problems with access. Military and relatives give the golden circle. The rest had to sell everything to get here, their meagre holdings, to deal with the bond maimed, tertiary cancers as big as pumpkins, amputated stumps unshorn, unsealed with button stitch. A sharp pain it was to care for this child bride and her little girl, suffering with such little comfort. My children for a while. They were the lucky young. She slept on the floor, singing her Baghdad lullaby. Children of deserters persecuted in their schools, brothers pulled out from behind school desks. Walking between the Ibn al-Dhar Hospital and the Rashid Hotel, a little country club for the expats. Glimpsing, unwittingly, a photo pinned on a school wall, unspeakable. A child posed in a Salvador Dali, infamous image. No eye couldn't see it. Drilled into the oddballs passing, cautionary tale to whisper, to hide. Little friends made to witness. Something was lost forever. And what of these new present and savage neighbours I was discovering? Morning calls for Allah Akbar from the minarets near Torblock 7. An emaciated ensemble of young soldiers in khaki fatigues and jack boots, all frog march in rapid fire, angled ground, measured TK, TK shapes. A deafening sound, a morning volley to awaken at dawn. Well, we were all in it together with them, weren't we? Patriotic boys, granddads, terrified. Serve or we'll serve you up with your wives and children. Matthew Mushglaini, no problem, my eyes. We kept our heads down lapping the waters to the marshlands in Basra. Hush, hush, no photos here. These people were the people without appliances. Through water rushes a secret river through the snowman's land. A land to where the deserters stole away. Elaborate, intricate, woven rooms, domed in a large reception atrium. Tapestries of rush and bamboo, elegant cupolas and high ceilings. A straw voice home in a little galleries of the marsh. A floor to swat. Mayan chai aini, sweet syrupy, black, pungent, saccharine chai. Rumours of chemical weapons, and they slept on their floors. Mushkla, big time. Yalim shikeo, get up and walk. A vision, a captain from Sudan Special Forces, from his elite parachute regiment, from the Royal Guard. The most handsome and crafted man, 6'7", the hero of the regime. Countless drops in sight, enemy territory, all successful, a very successful murderer. But then pull back the covers, and the bitter irony is revealed. For beneath those beautiful faces and eyes, nothing was under the control of head office. Which death-defying challenge? A fall from his cosy domesticity of his little tiled roof. And God knows there were biblical, dusty, boxy affairs, those roofs. But it took the legs from under him, no less so. And arms and dignity and soul and light from his lovely young lady's eyes. A new parachute exit chute to shoot to a new journey, none the less terrifying. The 1 metre journey in his hydraulic standing frame. A long road from horizontal to vertical. A repeated arduous heart strain for the both of us. VP check, dorsum of hand, check the clammy, pinpoint pupils. Try though he did, he failed to last more than 1 or 2 seconds upright. Artificially imposed standing and his tired indulgent smile. I won't ever walk again, sister. Why? Right, oh, no, how they collect this. But you can look your children in the eye. You can drain your kidneys and train your eyes. Prune back set of targets for this beautiful Jamil paratrooper, whose wings were clipped. at Menade unpinned neath a set of pins, no wind beneath this pilot's wings. And still he smiled, Irish sister. And still, looking up beneath her Jamil's giant jawline, is on his airborne journey, 1 meter up, his Habibi awoke. She slept on the floor, but she no longer sang her Baghdad lullaby. So long.
Few still to get through here, not much time, so we're going to get Sue Blue up to the right now. Great to have Sue back with us tonight.
Hey.
Thanks very much. Well, okay, I'll make my choice right now. I'll stick with the newest and I'll loosen up the topic. I thought I'd write about something that probably all of us know. Snail weather. When evening has fallen silent after lashing rains, crawling, squeaking on the concrete, you can hear the snails in the warm, wet night. Slugs on slimy sliding trails come gliding down the path, writing secret messages into the squishy grass with molecule concoctions. Passing shiny information directions to the scraps left behind for them to lunch on, slick encrypted tracks that coil on sodden mud. With chemical intelligence, creeping slugs and snails secrete their sleeky pheromones on moist and sleepy soils to leak the yummy news. Harmlessly, the mollusks munch away their harvest of waste. Near blind, you step into the dark and cringe to feel the crunch of fragile fractal shells. With disgust, you raise your shoe to face the sticky goo. The night is getting wetter now, dense drizzle drenching through. Too bad for snail and you. Drawing back into your house like crawlers on the trail, you slip away from slug and rain before a giant animal might crack down on your shell.
Nice one. We have John McNally.
Would be a night I do too, but they're very short and they're site specific. The first one I might have read here before, and it's called Harry Langer, and you reminded me of it because you're Amish reference. So, people in Cork asked me why I grew a beard. Well, when I arrived here, there were signs everywhere saying "Be Amish," so I did. this is site specific. It's called The Hidden Horologist, and it's about a brewery which will remain nameless. But here goes. They came from Holland over here and stole our Viking brewery, but they let it rot and they talked not that keeping clock was civic duty, for their minds were in the future, not the present or the past, and if they left its cogs and gears, accuracy would not last. Then after 5 years and 4 hours lost, they began to stage events. Our heresy hero found this development heaven sent. At once the plan was set to get behind the stage, with phone to ear and confident cheer, no one noticed his visage. Then past the rows and fretting grooms, and into musty gloom, that beating heart and sweat apart, victory would be soon. Up cast iron stairs over generations of paint, adrenaline pumping, dusty breath faint, avoiding the gaps and fatal voids, worth it to stop each clock glance annoyed. Then through the door and across the gutter, tiptoe across roofs, startled pigeons flutter. Leap into apex of Tudor facade, where said clock sits, and falls to his knees, sinks into the bird's ship, for where there should be cogs, squirrels, weights, and fixies, was a small metal box installed in the 60s. Momentarily startled, remember mattered in hand, its mechanisms worked painfully slowly, but that was grand. When it moved gradually, then flashed, thought this was it, phantom security guards, tipped off by drunks, saying, holy shit. Clock eventually corrected, back across the roof, down undetected. Checked his watch, satisfied that clock would not bother for a while. Well, not until he had to do it again, to change back for winter time.
We have Joe Dog in.
called Dancing Queen, and it was a workshop we did with Niall O'Connor in Fermoy. So we were given two words, red shoes and sardines. That's what I wrote. She wore red shoes and smelled of sardines. I see her now, standing in the sidelines of the school disco, greasy hair falling like rain around her shoulders, summer dress with flowers faded. Slivers of silver from the disco ball catch her features intermittently. Blobs of colour float around her, enveloping the frame, frail female form. Young lads, elbow and swagger and egging each other on, daring to ask her out. Young ones point, snigger into curled up palms and laugh. Crumpling her skirt, eyes closed, she sways to ABBA songs, rocking side to side, and steps onto the floor, onto the dance floor empty, lost to the lyrics of Dancing Queen. Heavy boots thunder in, big strong arms lift and grab, fists drag, the girl in the summer dress, with flowers faded, that wore red shoes and smelled of sardines.
Now back from his writer's retreat, to welcome Paul Casey.
And it's about 10 seconds to midnight. So we're about to go up to the crane line. So I've just got a couple of very small, lighter pieces for you. This is called Only Boy in the Girls' School. It's a true story. Before global warming was discovered, the boy crossed the road to the girls' school each day. He was too late for local language uptake and needed an extra subject some way. Call it trans-tropic immigration delay. So he slumps his shoulders, clutches his satchel and makes for the door to the whistles and jeers of his jealous peers. He fake trudges out and over the lane and once out of sight jigs and curvets this 13-year-old schoolboy off to geography and a room full of 15-year-old nymph goddesses halfway behind the church to even his nerves. He'll have a quick smoke, straighten shoulders and tie up. A mint check the hair, off he floats, cool as jewels, and he's there, to his desk at the back of the class. Has heaven come early for him, he asks. What has he done to deserve it? But who cares? Oh, the stresses in grasping contours, cartography, coastlines, and landscapes. Yes, contours and landscapes emerge. Environmental hazards when, for example, necessary glacial processes fail to occur. The teacher talks of rivers, population densities, sustainable development and greenhouse effects, equatorial ecologies, El Nino immensity, while all he perceives in this focused diffusion is a biosphere of wonders, both flora and fauna, and the hurricanes, tornadoes, monsoons, typhoons, tsunamis. As he grips both edges of desk to defer continental drift, to escape extreme tectonic activity, elevations in climate and humidity. And this last one's from my nephew. I went out to visit him and my father, my brother, and South Africa last year. And they had to play a father-son golf tournament, and my brother had never played before in his life. My nephew goes to a school where they play golf. Right. So we all went out one day to a driving range, and my dad was there, it's quite amazing, who used to be a scratch golfer, and my brother, who's never played golf in his life, who had to now play this tournament with his son, Joshua. So this is called Better Crack, and it's for Joshua. Slap, crack, thwack of the slitter of a perfectly connected golf ball with a B in ball is a one metal ping. like the tea and t-shirt, snapped into symmetry for de-wrinkling and folding, that is. A pistol tries hard to compete. The way the air is cracked in war zones, over and over, again and again, missing the mark. And when last was there not a war on somewhere, with a peck of a teaspoon on a hard-boiled egg? The crack of a high branch in the jungle. Cracks of the tea towel whipping wars in the kitchen. Crack of the post flap of the thunderclap when lit up. Or just the crack snapple on top of the morning to your drowsy waking head.
Woo!
I sense a city of night. I sense a city of night, where all the little lights illuminate your sight. I sense a city of light, though dimly lit, it's of a pure light. I sense a city of night where every daytime's dust and kite gets a flicker in small suns, glowing from their vocal cords, shining on the streets with a laugh and a chat for the people that they meet. For isn't it easy to say there's no poetry in a city with no books? Easy to say the drama's died in a city of strangers without stages. Easy to say that when we met eye to eye, that we didn't know then. A city of night is coming? If so, when? Mm.